Good morning. So our next speaker is E-Trade Financial. With me on stage is Chief Financial Officer Michael Pizzi, who is here to share a bit more on the current operating environment for E-Trade and hopefully the next leg of growth. So Mike, stage is yours.
Thank you, Christian, and thank you for hosting here today. It's always nice to get out of town right on the eve of the next snowstorm. Okay, I'll start with the safe harbor statement. I'm sure we all know what it says, but for the newcomers, I will be making some forward-looking statements, as well as talking some non-GAAP metrics, so please consult our filed financials. If you followed the company story for some time, this slide shouldn't be new. It is our company overview. Gives you a historical context for the company from 30 years ago when we processed the first online trade to where we are today with 3.2 million brokerage accounts and 288 billion in customer assets. If you're new to the story or new to the company, please take it away and spend some time with it. But as we're going to be covering a lot of the detail here today in the presentation, I will move on. And so let's begin on the next slide. The world is moving in our direction. The adoption rate of digital technologies across age groups, across every age group, from the youngest to the oldest, continues to increase. In many industries, digital is a complete solution. However, in financial services, we feel that it is not a complete solution and that it requires an assisted or human touch or human element to it. And that is where we find ourselves today, and that is the value proposition that we bring to our customers. If you look at the left-hand side, the direct industry, that is us and our closest competitors, by putting out a stronger overall value proposition of both digital and human, have been able to outpace the traditional industry in brokerage by about 5 percentage points from 2008. Now, digital is in our DNA. I talked a little just before about the first online trade being processed by E-Trade in 1983 by our founder, Bill Porter, to several other notable firsts. The first mobile application, the first tablet application, as well as many other notable firsts that you'll see there. Now, what I want to impress, though, is that the innovation and digital innovation that we bring is not just for the most sophisticated traders. What we are trying to do is build simple, intuitive, and easy to use digital technology for mainstream investors. We've refined our slide on key business objectives, and we've taken it down to two main points that I want to share. We are looking to accelerate the growth in our core brokerage business and generate robust earnings growth and healthy returns on capital. Now, I'm going to talk a lot about the details on this slide, specifically some of the ones on the capital side on number two. But for number one, we're going to go into a bit more detail. But what I want you to take away is two things. One, the continued investment in innovation in the digital customer experience, and two, the value that our corporate services channel is offering us to energize our growth. So let's talk a little bit about our model. On the digital side, the three main platforms of eTrade.com, eTrade Mobile, and eTrade Pro. And in mobile, that's your phone, that's your watch, that's your tablet. And then the human side, our 250 financial consultants, 24/7 customer support, as well as 18% of our accounts covered by Platinum Relationship Management. We seek to be there for you, whether it's in person, on the phone, or online. Our trading, margin, lending, and cash businesses, I think it's a good example of how our hybrid model works. From a full range of product, as a good example of that, our commission-free ETFs beat or rival some of our larger competitors. In terms of guidance and the human element, our representatives can guide customers through the most complex option strategies, build bond ladders, and offer live in-branch education, as well as walk you through online digital education. On the cash side, we offer real-time cash movement, free debit and ATM cards, free online and mobile bill pay, and now Apple Pay. and showing how we continually innovate our platform. We've recently launched a new margin analyzer for customers to walk through risk scenarios and other items in their margin, especially margin calculations around complex option positions and complex borrowing positions. In terms of core metrics, 2015, 155,000 DARTs in a very volatile period. As you saw, we released last night 175,000 DARTs for the month of January, so the volatility picking up the pace of trading a bit. 14% of DARTs were executed via mobile platform, and 23% of DARTs in the year, relatively steady option percentage, continues to move forward. I want to talk a little bit more about what we're doing in retirement, investment, and savings. What we're really trying to do in the retirement area is help mainstream investors take control and understand the steps that they need to achieve their desired retirement objective. And how we're doing that is by continuously improving our education offerings, whether it's live in-branch seminars, whether it's on-demand digital education, whether it's the tools and resources to map their retirement portfolio the way they need. Our life stage planning resources help investors through all phases of the retirement process. We continually build on helpful resources. We've improved our Bond Resource Center over the past, and most recently, again showing our continuous innovation, have launched Tip Ranks, which is a product that we've brought into our website to help investors handle the volume of information that they receive, that they can receive online, and to be able to prioritize it and look through that information in a meaningful way. When we look at the retirement, investment, and savings space, we feel that this is probably the greatest area for us to improve our wallet share with customers. Right now, we're at 10 to 12% of total wallet share. 17% of our customers' assets are in retirement accounts. That gives us a big opportunity. If we can move more, grow quicker in the retirement space, we will improve wallet share. If you look at 2015, we continued to grow retirement assets in a challenging market environment with a lot of volatility, and continued to grow fee-generating assets as well. Okay, I want to talk a little bit about our brand and what we're doing in the advertising front. We have one of the most recognizable brands in financial services in the United States and possibly, you know, even beyond the United States. We are continuing to build the brand platform and continuing our television advertising with some recent ads. But we are also finding the right mix between broad media and digital advertising. We're using a digital-driven strategy to put our product and platform right in front of customers as they are looking for the services that we offer. I'd like to review some of our key metrics next. In a volatile year, we continued to exhibit growth with net new brokerage assets of 9.3 billion, 96,000 net new brokerage accounts, and continued to manage our attrition rate below 9%. While a little off the prior year's record pace and a little bit slightly higher on attrition, overall a very healthy year. I also wanted to share with you a little bit about what we're doing in our corporate services platform. We are in a very enviable position here. We have the leading platform in the industry, and we serve some of the largest corporations, 20% of the S&P 500, 20% of some of the most innovative and largest corporations in America, giving us a great position in the stock plan administration business. It is our strategic imperative to convert participants in these stock plans into customers. While we've been doing okay thus far, we think this is a great opportunity to do better and a channel by which we can energize growth. Let me show you why. If you look at the next slide, you'll see the growth in total stock plan accounts that has occurred. And look at the number in 2015 versus 2014. We have 1,000 corporate clients, again, 20% of the S&P 500, and right now this is contributing at about a third to our gross net new brokerage accounts. Penetrating and deepening our relationship with these stock plan participants, especially those that seek to build a diversified investment portfolio and diversify their wealth, is an imperative and where we are focusing many of our investment resources in the coming year. Okay, moving on to the balance sheet. On this slide, we show our asset composition and our liability composition of our balance sheet. The items in orange are what we will call legacy positions. The orange on the asset side is our loan book. We're going to cover that in a good bit of detail on the next slide. As for the liability position, the orange there is really the result of the slide being an average balance. As many of you probably know, we terminated all of our legacy liabilities in Q3 of last year. The key takeaway is that our balance sheet is becoming increasingly dominated by our core business, as it should be, with little in the way of legacy assets. The loan portfolio is now down to $5 billion, and we'll go through the key risks of the remaining in that portfolio on the next slide. In the bottom panel, you see where our spread ended at 264 basis points for 2015 on $40.8 billion of interest-earning assets. And the key there is our Q4 spread was 288 basis points. That shows you the power in getting rid of the expensive liability position, that 328 basis points on our liability side of our balance sheet. So significant improvement in spread outlook. Let's talk a little bit about the loan portfolio. The loan portfolio stands at around $5 billion, and the key element on this slide that we're focusing on is the risk remaining in conversions from IO to amortizing loans. In our 1 to 4 family book, we have about $1 billion of loans that will convert from IO to amortizing over the next 2 years. In the home equity book, that number is about $1.1 billion. If you look over to the far left of the slide, you'll see where we came from peak LTV to where we are today. Where we stand today on the 1 to 4 family book is an LTV ratio of about 77%, mitigating most of the risk of those conversions. On the home equity book, we also see a pretty significant improvement, but holding an LTV of around 90 from a peak of 114. If we look at the bottom panel, you can see what conversions are coming. In 2016, we are expecting $800 million of home equity conversions, followed by $300 million in 2017, although the prepayment rate on the portfolio remains elevated and those numbers continue to come down. The good news is in 2015, we have a good data sample of about $400 million of loans that we can look at. That have converted. And I shared some comments on our last earnings call around that population of loans. Of that $400 million, what we see when we study that $400 million is a doubling of the overall default rate from the post-conversion to the pre-conversion, from pre-conversion to post-conversion, getting to about a default level of about 12% from 6% on the prior population. This is how we've set our loss model, this is how we've done our reserve calculation, and this is how we result in the allowance balance that we have today. The next slide reviews the progress we've made on the capital plan. And we've made significant progress since we first outlined the capital plan in 2012 across all of these main areas. I like this slide a lot because it's what I've spent really the last 7 years or so working on. Whether we start at the beginning of the capital plan and deleveraging our balance sheet to hit a target capital ratio of 9.5% to get capital moving up to a parent corporation, which allowed a whole lot of good things to happen, including paying down our debt, down to a $1 billion target. We're going to cover some of these in some of the coming slides, all the way culminating in the recent authorization to conduct share repurchases for $800 million by our board that was done last November. And being in the position of capital strength in order to be able to absorb the loss we needed to take in order to terminate the $4.4 billion of wholesale funds to really put us in the position that we are in today. Along that was a lot of investment in our regulatory position and strengthening our position with our regulators and our risk management program. So let's talk a little bit more about capital generation. At the end of the fourth quarter, we had $447 million in corporate cash. Anticipated the prior quarter bank dividend of $97 million, prior quarter securities dividend of $24 million. We have repurchased in the quarter to date $125 million of stock and $11 million of debt service, which gives us a projected corporate cash position of $432. So you can see how the dividend amounts put into stock repurchases essentially leaves a corporate cash position broadly unchanged. Now, if you look down below, the bank ended the period at 9.7% Tier 1 leverage ratio with an authorization to drop to 8% of its Tier 1 leverage ratio. There's two sources of capital deployment going on. One is the dividend movement in the prior panel up above. The second is the growth in the balance sheet. I'll talk a little bit about that, and we'll go into it a little bit more on subsequent pages, as we are increasing the size of the balance sheet to our target state of 49.5, as we pointed out on the earnings call. This is directly related to the termination of the wholesale funds that we talked about earlier. It is allowing us to bring off-balance sheet sweep deposits back onto our balance sheet, and that's incredibly low-cost funding, which we are investing to improve our outlook. That gives us a pro forma leverage ratio then of 8.4%, which then leaves $130 million of excess. We plan to move that $130 million of excess at some point up to the, make it available to the parent company as well. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the two most recent capital actions, and I don't want to dwell on what's been completed, but I do think it's important to show where we've come from. The debt restructuring that we did in early 2015 allowed us to take our debt position down to $1 billion, which is our target range of debt, at a coupon level of 5% and a maturity of 7.5 years. And the progress of that, you know, is striking if you look at the panel. If you go back to 2010, it had a coupon of 10.4%. Debt position of $1.6 billion, a maturity of 5.6 years. So we lowered the cost, lowered the amount, and increased the maturity profile, all reducing in risk, culminating in an upgrade. Not the only thing that got us the upgrade. A lot of other items went into that calculation, but that is a central factor into becoming an investment-grade company. On the wholesale funding side, I think we've covered some of this. We took out the most expensive legacy liabilities, that $4.4 billion you see there at 329 basis points. And that is key to our strategy of moving low-cost customer deposits back onto our balance sheet to improve our earnings. So enough about what we've completed. Let's talk about what we're doing. First panel there, growing the balance sheet. So we continue to move deposits onto our balance sheet. As you saw in the last quarter, we began that process, and that process is continuing. In Q4, we ended at $45.4 billion. If we deploy $4.1 billion of deposits from our off-balance sheet sources to on-balance sheet sources, we get to $49.5 billion in balance sheet. Our total available off-balance sheet cash at that point is roughly about $2 billion. And as I highlighted on our last earnings call, it's not really economic for us to continue past the 49.5 at this time. But please keep in mind, as our business grows, that $1.9 billion will continue to grow. And at some point, that calculation will change. If we look at the right panel, we have used $175 million thus far of our $800 million share buyback. Given the forward generation of our capital, we will continue to work on this as we move forward. Slide 21 reviews some of our key progress again. And we're calling this out. We'll see in a minute how we've changed a few other things, but we're calling this out to show that the amount of progress that we have made over time. Clearly the decline in provision from $441 million of expense to $40 million of benefit last year, servicing cut more than in half, FDIC cut by two-thirds, and corporate interest cut by about the same amount. So if I move to the next slide, okay, I know that I changed something everybody really, really liked. But I think this is going to add a lot of new and very helpful information. This is our long-term earnings slide. For those of you that don't know it, what we have typically done is taken the last 12 months on the far left column of actuals and then layered in things related to either the environment or our legacy that we expected to change or we were working on within our capital plan, to bring about what we think the long-term value would be. As we've executed on a lot of the initiatives within the capital plan, we've completed a lot of items, so it needed to be updated. And we needed to make some key changes here. So what we've done, if you look at the first column on the right, is we've laid out where we think we're going to get to with our current capital actions. That is growing the balance sheet to $49.5 billion. So we've given a spread guidance range, and the upper end of that range was 275 basis points. So if we take that and buy our balance sheet at 49.5, that means net interest should grow to 1.251. adjusted non-interest revenue will come down a bit simply because the value of we were earning on the off-balance sheet deposits are now on, so we don't earn quite as much there. The second thing I want to point out then is the operating margin guidance that we gave, or 39%. That sets based on that revenue, then a target expense level. And then we can flow all the way through, adjusting by the $800 million in planned share purchases to get to an EPS number of $1.69. Now, I think a lot of the new information really comes in the next two columns. The next column in particular shows our interest rate sensitivity. For a long time, we shied away from providing any great detail around our interest rate sensitivity, and that was with good reason. There was a lot of structural shifts going on in the balance sheet, and so while the number, we could have given a number, but the number would have changed as things moved, such as paying down the corporate debt, terminating the wholesale funds as we'd given. We find ourselves today in a much more stable spot with a target balance sheet size, a target debt size, a target liability position. And so if we apply a 100 basis point parallel shock to our pro forma 12/31 balance sheet, scaled up to $49.5 billion, we will generate an additional $189 million of income through the net interest line. And you can, through the net interest and the adjusted non-interest line, so improvement in both on-balance sheet and off-balance sheet cash. This is how we looked at when we gave our guidance of improvement in operating margin with a shift in interest rates, taking the middle of the 40s range that we gave and applying 45%, following that through, you see the value of a changing interest rate environment to the company. The last column then shows the value of growth in the core business. And if you look across the bottom of the page, you'll see the balance sheet numbers that I just talked about, but now you'll see the next column where it talks about customer activity and what the value of a 5% change in trading activity, margin, customer cash does. Now, if you look there, some of those numbers are sensitive to the interest rate environment themselves, so we've broken them out for you. So you can see the 5% business shock plus the movement in interest rates that would occur and how that impacts then our operating margin and then the value of share repurchases. So the points I'd like to leave you with today is that we've been consistently at the forefront of digital technology. We are well positioned to capitalize on secular growth, and we see a significant opportunity to improve both wallet share and to continue our growth from our corporate services platform, which we think will generate compelling value for our owners.
Great. Thank you, Mike. So I'll ask a couple of questions before opening up to the audience. So maybe we'll just start with, I think, a topic that got a lot of attention in the last earnings calls around acquisitions. And you talked about growing the business either via bank or via brokerage acquisition. I think the strategic rationale for brokerage makes complete sense, but or it's very intuitive, that's a better word. But maybe you talk about why a bank, what kind of credit risk you're willing to take on if you went down the bank route.
Sure, I definitely could give an update on that. We talked a lot about acquisitions in the last two earnings calls, and we gave a little bit more detail on the last one. We brought the topic of acquisitions up largely because we find ourselves in a place of generating capital, and for the first time, given regulatory standing in the company, have the ability really to pursue an acquisition strategy. From a view of how we think about these, clearly acquisitions in the brokerage space can generate a lot of value. In terms of building our scale. Scale acquisitions in brokerage space make a lot of sense. The second category of acquisitions are things that will bolster some of the things I talked about today. So, for instance, something that will give us an even better position in corporate services or stock plan administration, things that will accelerate our progress in the retirement, investment, and savings space, so building on capabilities there. Those would be more capability acquisitions versus scale acquisitions to help better and build our platform. The last category we mentioned is banking. We see some opportunity in banking in areas that are very tied to our business, and that is going to be in trust, custody, payment services, items like that that will help with our existing customer base in terms of cash management, asset management, or other areas. Now, in terms of credit, obviously some of these entities will come with some credit exposure. Anything we do of the returns necessary and to earn on the capital that we would deploy in that strategy, and we would hold it to the highest level and the highest bar that we can. Now, that said, I think we will tend to focus really in the brokerage space and in areas of capabilities first. And anything in banking would have to be overwhelmingly good if it involved an element of risk.
Okay. And then how should we think about your acquisition capacity? Is it a case of using internally generated capital, or are you willing to tap the debt markets, or I guess issue equity if the right opportunity occurs?
Well, you know, we were very thoughtful in how we set our target debt position at $1 billion of debt, and that we didn't pick that just because it's a round number. We looked at a lot of different financial metrics. Obviously, anything in the acquisition arena that gave us greater earnings capacity to support a larger amount of debt could use debt for it. But from the guiding principles of how we look at leverage, we don't see leverage going up significantly. We do have a lot of cash flow to the parent, as I highlighted in the corporate cash slides. So smaller acquisitions that would be tactical or improving our capabilities can be done out of cash. And then obviously the largest acquisitions would have to be looked at through the lens of equity.
Okay. If there are any questions, just raise your hand. Okay, for the shy audience, I'll keep going. I guess the health of the retail consumer or customer, you know, trading activity is up to a very decent start, I think up 19% in January month over month. But the markets are very jittery, so it's tricky to differentiate between what is, I guess, you know, retail engagement versus, you know, people just selling out and sitting out the market. So I guess what are you seeing in the customer base to give you some sense that it's a maybe healthier kind of uptick in activity?
Sure. What we're seeing right now is what one would expect given the volatility. We obviously have built a good bit of models for our business, some of them around stress testing and otherwise. If you were to run these market movements and VIX movements through those models, you would get patterns that emerge much like we're seeing in the business. That's telling us that this isn't really a major shift or anything different other than a period of heightened volatility with a bit of a downward trend. You do see customers moving to the sideline. We highlighted on our earnings call, margin book had declined from year-end levels to about $7 billion. That's customers just taking off some risk overall. Nothing that's uncharacteristic of the type of market environment that we find ourselves in.
Okay. And on to the slide deck. Thanks for the new slide, giving us the interest sensitivity. It's very helpful. But just given the current environment, and it looks like more of a kind of yield curve flattening environment that we have today, I guess how would those numbers change if we thought about flattening rather than a parallel shift? And then also, I don't know what your deposit beta assumption is.
We've given a 100 basis point parallel shift because it's the easiest to sort of view. We looked at that at a time when it looked to be about, you know, four increases in the federal funds rate coming this year in terms of the forward curve. And then really looking at sort of the evolution of forward rates, it looks like it was a pretty reasonable shock to apply to give an element of base sensitivity. Obviously, if we see long end or intermediate rates continue to come down and short end rates rise, that does create a very different dynamic. But I don't think that dynamic can continue for any extended period. But it does put pressure on reinvestment rates and prepayment rates. Versus the short end in terms on funding rates. Thus far, you know, our deposit coefficients are embedded in that analysis, so you can begin to see how they will flow through. But keep in mind, we have a very large amount of sticky rate insensitive deposits, and that's what contributes to the interest rate sensitivity that you see.
Okay. Any questions? All right. So one last one for me. You know, I guess just looking a bit more broadly in terms of the growth of the business, if we look at, I guess, one measure would be net new assets, which has basically been about around, call it 8 to 10 billion per year for the last couple of years. So as you think about some of the initiatives you've put together, be it Type E campaign, retirement center, more recently tax center, I guess, are you seeing any payoffs from those initiatives? And if so, like, you know, maybe what metrics can we use to kind of judge that?
Well, I think net new assets is the right metric. Now, obviously, 2014 was a record pace, so we came off that pace in 2015. And I think, part of net new assets and net new accounts are going to be correlated to the broader environment. Our goal is to create a trend of growth through shifts in the environment. So grow faster in the best environments, but grow less slow in when the environment shifts. And that's where we focused in providing the right tools, providing the right education, focusing really on the strength of our corporate services platform, going out and making sure that we are directly working with stock plan participants, and showcasing them the full value of the product that they have. Keep in mind, every stock plan participant has a full service E-Trade account, where they can engage in any of the strategies that we were just talking about for their investing needs, for their saving needs, and for trading.
Great. There are no questions. I think we'll wrap it up. Thank you very much, Mike.
Thank you.
Thank you.